You know, as long as I've been reading the news, the international news story, the mother of all protracted conflicts, the test case for whether peace is possible anywhere has been the Middle East. If peace could happen there, then it could happen, you'd think, anywhere. Today, one of the key actors in the search for Mideast peace died, former Israeli leader Shimon Peres. We're going to spend some time on the show today asking what that means for Israelis, for Palestinians, and for peace. In 1994, Peres shared a Nobel Peace Prize with Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. The Nobel recognized their roles in the Oslo Peace Accords, a deal negotiated secretly in Oslo that was the most promising hope for Mideast peace, even if peace itself has proved elusive since then. But Peres stayed committed to the cause, as he explained in 2013.
People are sick and tired of wars and terror. And when you look at the polls on both parties, you see a majority for peace. So we have to continue and try. That's it.
We'll hear more from that interview with Peres later on The World. Right now, I want to turn to Dina Kraft, who worked as a journalist in Israel for more than 10 years. She says Peres was a fixture in Israel ever since the nation was born in 1948.
Shimon Peres was in public life for about 70 years, so there was almost never a time that current Israelis can remember him not being around. I mean, he was there in the early days, one of Ben-Gurion's personal sort of entourage of advisors. He was sort of selected.
David Ben-Gurion, the founder of modern Israel.
Exactly. So he's the last living link to David Ben-Gurion. He helped create the nuclear program in the south of Israel. He was, you know, had roles in intelligence and elsewhere in Israel, and he was part of public life from the time he was a teenager. He came to Israel as a young boy from Poland, and he never lost that Polish accent of his. Mm. He still had this that very thick Polish accent, and he was sort of a tie to a different type of politician and a leader, and a tie to a different time as well, when Israel was founding and was starting and sort of had a vision and hope. And he had that vision and hope, which he carried with him to the peace negotiation table as one of the important figures in forging the Oslo peace process with Rabin and with Arafat.
I mean, it is pretty remarkable when you think about it that at least one of Israel's founding fathers from 1948 lived until 2016. What would you say was his biggest single contribution to the story of Israel?
I think it's hard to narrow it down to one thing. I think he'll be most remembered, though, as a sort of voice of hope for peace, a vision. You know, Israel's a place today that feels very dark. It feels without real sort of any hope for any kind of real dramatic breakthrough with the Palestinians. But he always carried this mantle of hope and peace and this idea that the future could be different. He was very youth-focused. He's also very focused on Israel as a tech economy. Back when no one knew what Facebook was, he was touting Facebook. Facebook was this place for connection and people. He managed to keep this very youthful vigor about him despite his age. And I think people couldn't really ever imagine him not being part of Israel because he was for so long. There's a Israeli satirical show that's a little bit like Saturday Night Live. And on its 60th anniversary special, they had Peres, they were doing Israel Imagine the Future, 100th birthday of Israel. And Peres was still there and vital and kicking, and he was still in office. I mean, it was just so part of the fabric of the country. But I think he's going to be most missed for being able to talk about peace without it sounding hokey, to talk about peace and to still have some sense that it might actually happen and there could be a different future, even when things feel bleak. And now there's no one really to pick up that torch and pick up that mantle. I think Israelis are feeling a little bit lost without him today.
How do you reconcile this idea that he was strong on peacemaking? That is kind of his reputation. But also he had this deep involvement in the military and was kind of hawkish.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in his early days, he was hawkish, very much so. And he also, don't forget, it was under his government that the first settlements in the West Bank began. And so, you know, he's very much tied up with the problems that we have today and the sort of intractable nature of it. But I think like many political leaders, especially as they get older and especially from a vantage of being in charge, quote unquote, they start seeing how, you know, intractable the war was and how conflict is not the answer and you can't have a Spartan state forever. How do you maintain that? And how can you feed your country just on militarism?
Dina, you met and interviewed Shimon Peres several times. What was your impression of him as a man?
I mean, very warm and personable, sort of a sparkle in his eye. He really liked public life. He really liked being on. when I interviewed him in South Africa when I was based there, he had come in for a UN conference. I remember he looked tired. He looked fatigued. But as soon as the lights went on of the camera, as soon as he was on and rolling, he sort of came to life again. And then when the cameras went off, I could see him sort of sinking back into his chair again a little bit, looking more his age, shall we say.
Dina Kraft, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Dina Kraft spent more than 10 years in Israel as a journalist. She now directs the Media Innovation Program at Northeastern University here in Boston.